Hello. Is anyone there?
Well, hi and welcome. I appreciate all the feedback that you've given. Are there any brief questions or comments that you'd like to make at the beginning? Remember, we're going to save some time at the end and then add on 10 or 15 minutes for a discussion to the extent that you're interested to really apply some of this or to just talk further in discussion about application of this or clarification, whatever aspects would be most helpful to you. But any clarifications or questions right now? But one at a time. anything at all that would be helpful before we launch on our final seminar? Well, if not, we'll have more time at the end, so jot down any comments or questions or clarifications that you'd like to make or anything you'd like to just discuss further. We'll have a kind of a mini mentoring session to look at whatever aspects of understanding or application might be of most interest to you. So we'll go on lecture mode now. Final call, comments or questions? All right, we're on then. I'll put us on lecture mode, and we'll come back at the end for discussion. Okay, we've discussed the power of story and the concept of creating your own wellness story. We've looked together at how different this notion of creating your own story is from giving someone information, fitting into someone else's protocol, adding some other plan or information or program like a diet plan or an exercise program. We've discussed the first five steps in understanding a client story, the roadmap for a new wellness story. Recognize authorship, own your story, assess the plot and storylines, decide what to change, and map changes. Now, ideally, you've looked at and hopefully done some work yourself in the workbook on the exercises and work tools to see how this can really illuminate by looking further at some of the assumptions and some of the beliefs that decisions are made on, to really illuminate some of that 90 to 95% of your operating system that's not conscious. So we're going to look at the final two steps in this seminar. Step 6 and 7 will address how to create new wellness experiences and identity. Now, again, these 7 steps are just the deconstruction of understanding and of change. 7 steps then to also write a new story or revise a current one. Step 6, author new experiences. We trust our stories. And remember, we talked about, you know, for a client, it's not their story. It's just the way things are. This is our concept as coaches, something that we're using to discuss and do training and understanding so that we're able to better engage in a change-making conversation with the client. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience a disharmony. So we have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Sometimes we simply revise our stories. Sometimes we change how we see reality. We've considered if your wellness story doesn't allow you to do certain things. If your story is, as we've discussed, that you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't know how to work out, you'll live out this assumption. At first, the idea of change will create excitement. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, anxiety. Then expansion. And only finally, mastery. So here are a dozen AAA principles of change to author a new story. The 3 A's: awareness, acceptance, and action. 1, You're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Remember we talked about in coaching, if it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. Honestly assess each of the storylines with the question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask people what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams, yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns are two, health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay for in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. If you incur debt, for example, in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. Another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this. I think you're each going to make such a difference in so many lives. So it's not work. This makes it easy to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. And remember, as my favorite grandmother said, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. That includes paying the price. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Now, here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and then it assumes its own momentum. Remember that you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. So here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. Three, you're writing your own story. And remember, all this is in your outline, so you can follow along. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're often not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience and law of attraction question combined. How does the brain work like a travel agent? The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? And when do you want to get there? A goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and determine the time. Think about what we do in every coaching conversation and every session. We began by asking the client, what would you like us to focus on? And then when we're clear about specifying that focus, we ask, where would you like to get to at the end of our conversation? So the client has created a map. The beginning and the end, you and the client together are on the same page to collaboratively pursue the success map, the destination that the client has determined. Now, a caveat here. You may, let me say that a different way. To know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. I borrowed that with his permission a long time ago from an old codger who was a very wise counselor on my alcohol treatment unit where I had a service. What you resist is what you draw toward you. It's an engagement. Resistance is an engagement. It's very much like saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. Most of suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. 4, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had a vision and specific goals for their life in business. 5 decades later, a follow-up showed that those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. And another similar study was done that showed that 97% of graduates, of all undergraduates in a particular college that requested to be remain unknown, was 3% had goals. 20 years later, 97% of the assets was owned by that 3%. Interesting figures. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. I'd suggest reviewing in the workbook that's accompanying the exercise 11 Steps to Ignite Success. Now, it's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. Almost all people, though, have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time, where and when the travel agent questions. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. A goal. I will reach 185 pounds by July 31st, 2020. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of $300 to my retirement fund from my checking account the first day of each month. Now, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending part of March each year skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every August riding on the coast of Maine. You guys will have to substitute your own goals there. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that may seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress, to shrink the change. For example, if you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks, identify one specific thing that you can do next that will give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Here's an example. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. I know I'm reiterating, but I want to make a point here. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed about 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. He was interviewed immediately at the end of the race and was asked how did he keep himself going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead. His response, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. Now, he knew where the telephone poles went, but he only looked at the next step, and it kept him going. So, divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something that you can focus on. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a puzzling picture on his wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed curiously out of focus. As I met with him each week, I glanced at the photograph until finally, toward the end of the year, I asked him about it. "Look carefully, Dave," he said. "What do you see?" Well, I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography did not help. I said, "Steve, the only thing I notice is that in the entire picture, there's only one branch of one tree in focus." He nodded. He said, "That's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things may seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly," which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year overwhelmed residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes a minimum of 25 to 30 days of repeating a behavior to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it the default mode. So write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. Overall wellness is not based on some big monumental choice, certainly not on abstract ideas and purposes, but on little things. If you plan to run 30 minutes on the treadmill but get off after 10, convinced you're a little stiff today, it's one small choice, no big deal. Now, it will make it easier to get off the next time, too. You resolve to cut calories and then grab a few peanut M&Ms from the candy bowl. Not really thinking about the choice because no single M&M, not even 5, caused someone to have diabetes. And no one experienced a heart attack because of 20 minutes less on the treadmill on one day. Yet our wellness is the cumulative result of thousands of such choices, seemingly innocuous and rationalized away, or justified into oblivion, a cumulative result of everything that we do, of our choices. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this all sounds so simple. In fact, good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. We can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. An infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created to further new goals. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses, to write new script for new experiences. In other words, a new story has to replace the old one. This is the only way it can change. You have to put the new experience in an output channel to complete the circuitry in the brain. Otherwise, it's just passive learning. There are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. There are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation. That's what we've been talking about in these 4 seminars. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your spouse or partner or business associate. Ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. If you do this, you can get direct feedback to employees or colleagues on a scale of 1 to 10. How am I doing? Then how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Bemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. he remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our true essence. So find people who already successfully do what you want and get what you want. Research what they do in order to do your own version of it. Ask, learn, question, but make it your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. And to me, an interesting statistic. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of the time, seasoned, experienced salespeople forget to ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve the client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. They read it and responded, "This is the most amazing report. How did you come up with these brilliant ideas?" She said, "I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better." Now, as a kind of a sidebar here, you may have noticed so far, each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of acceptance and awareness. The third A, 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, or narcissism meets chance. Now, there's a research on goal setting and success insurance on page 3.5 of your workbook. It's a study by Marshall Goldsmith of why people give up on goals. So if you read that in an informed way, the inverse of each of those is success insurance. If you insure not giving up on a goal, you're creating success insurance and how that can help ensure long-term achievement. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told repeatedly he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 simple questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the evening? And which newspaper should I advertise in? He added, "When I have an open house party, would you like an invitation?" In his first month, he took in $72,500. And in his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Bion was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in his Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running equipment and experience? He said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. For this race, you're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6 over several days, but nobody told Cliff this. And when the other runners were sleeping, he kept shuffling along. He shuffled along for 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity and the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Stories give birth to possibility. Stories are a way that we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure to get it right. And finally, step 7, program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. Just to briefly review, remember we talked about behavior patterns, belief systems downloaded, especially in the early years of life, can become automatic and operate without observation or awareness. And fast forward to adulthood, neuroscientists estimate about 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. We rarely observe these behavior patterns and beliefs because they're unconscious. So that means, and this is something important to listen for in your client, we may create two stories simultaneously. The surface story is what we're consciously intending to do, our aspirations. This is what I want from life. These are my goals. Yet the conscious mind is a tiny processor that determines things only about 5% of the time. So at the same time, an unconscious story, the shadow story, can ghostwrite behavior sometimes in a different direction than the conscious intention of the surface story. And that's when people get stuck. And here's how that can sound. Well, I can't get what I want, or the system seems to keep me from doing what I need. I don't think I really have what it takes. Many compromises occur when these two stories are written simultaneously. Here's another example. I want to claim my freedom and become totally my own person. But the shadow story is my partner acts like I'm taking it away from him or her when I'm self-sufficient. So we've touched on this before, but here's an application in a way to look at two basic principles that operate in terms of our motivation. And these are hardwired and have been from an evolutionary standpoint. The two basic motivations are to avoid pain and to seek pleasure. Now, the surface goal, the first surface story, may be something logical and conscious. I want to generate more income and create wealth. Yet, the shadow story may have different beliefs that are part of that unconscious operating system that have been there, conscious or not, that go in the other direction. Well, I don't think I have really what it takes. Or if I really put myself out and did everything and tried, then I would fail and I would be really humiliated. Now, that shadow story is not always, and usually is not, in fact, in conscious awareness. But this is where the shadow story looks to blame or excuse or justify and say, well, things just weren't lined up, or I just couldn't do what I needed to do, or, you know, there just wasn't the kind of support, or it's the economy. Now, there will always be a logical reason that makes it make sense, and the person who says it believes it. But here's a coaching application at this juncture. When somebody really wants to do something, and yet they stop themselves and don't proceed, maybe one immediate question is, what's your internal conversation, that instant that you stop yourself? Now, this assumes somebody has a plan. Because you remember, we don't need motivation, you just need a plan and stick to it. Now, if someone stops themselves, then that's where, when we want to hear what they're saying in their head, do they justify it by saying, well, you know, I'm not going to do it now, but I'm really going to get with it next Tuesday? Or do they just get scattered and lose focus on what they're going to do? Or do they defy their own authority and say, what the hell with it? I'm just going to go have a good time. What is their conversation? In other words, how can we understand together what they say to themselves to make it make sense to stop? Now, here's the bigger coaching perspective. Remember, the two motivations: to seek pleasure and to avoid pain. So if someone stops themselves, when they have a plan that could be successful, a coaching question may be, what is the greater pain if you don't proceed? What is the greater pleasure if you do proceed? So you're looking from a coaching perspective at these two fundamental hardwired motivations that we have as human beings, to look at how can someone strategically look at creating a plan despite these basic experiences. Now, there's also a component that we touched on early on about the last step, program new identity. Remember, we talked about the most fundamental motivation that we have as human beings is to return to our identity, because our identity is something we're familiar with. We have hardwired our identity. So any change from that is going to initially create the discomfort of doing something different that generates an immediate discomfort because we're not familiar with it. And the error detection mechanism says this is not right. So if a new behavior is generated, that new behavior needs to be incorporated into one's core identity. In other words, to transform the operating model of who they are in order to make it permanent. Or they'll just simply revert back to who they really are, what they did before. So this is constantly part of the work that we do as coaches in an ongoing way to develop self-empathy for the client so they can appreciate and become self-reflective and understand their own experience more and more, not just that 5 or 10% that's logical and conscious and intellectual, and then to look at reviewing how their experience and evolving behaviors are creating a new experience and a new way of regarding themselves. You're addressing that they're changing their operating system, acknowledging what they're doing that's different, and how that comes to be a part not just of self-reflection, but of self-reassessment and an evolution of a core model of how someone becomes. That may incorporate any number of things, including successful engagement, including replacement with new beliefs of effectiveness, and I can do this, and the kind of conclusions that are reached from successful performance and successful work. We'll come back to that if you are interested in the discussion and talk a little bit more about it. Now, here's something to consider that I'll simply call state of mind patterns. This is what you're going to see in working with clients because it's human nature. You're going to see a pattern at times more quickly in a wellness story. A new pattern of behavior can occur for a sustained period of time. Then it can be subjugated to another, even opposing mindset, most often a return to a comfort zone, a reversion to the familiar. For example, somebody who's overweight plans a weight loss program, achieves an ideal body weight, 30 pounds lighter. As soon as this target is reached, the plan is relaxed and gradually the weight comes back. Then the diet is reinstated. Now, what's missing here is the change was about the diet, not about the body image, the identity of how and who someone is. These successful programs address the evolution and change of body image along with behavioral and other changes. So you may see patterns that cycle quickly. Some patterns, though, have extremely long cycles and recognition occurs gradually. An example would be the aging process and the recognition of the need for exercise and nutrition that can be crystallized by an event such as a heart attack. You know, by the time somebody recognizes the pattern, it's that they are well into it and need to do some things that might be done in a preemptive way earlier on, and this may be some interest that you have. So here are some things that I want to just highlight in terms of choice enhancement. These are some considerations that apply to choices that can be based on emotion. Increased tension produces emotional regression. Stress can move somebody into an emotional pattern that's more characteristic of an earlier age. And remember I mentioned and recommended the Master States of Mind, the 30-minute webinar on the homepage of my website. Increased emotion narrows perspective and can create tunnel vision. And in coaching someone who has an enhanced emotion, attempting to use reason and logic will make them more tarked up, more digging in their toes, and less able to access reason. So, again, state comes before strategy and story. Stress derails balanced, big-picture thinking to focus on the most recent and the most emotionally charged. So this is where you can look at things in a balanced way with your client. So remember, when someone is in a state of upset, the first order of business is to regulate feelings, to help them get grounded and centered, and it may simply be by resonating empathically with their experience. Then to look at what would be the next best things to do. And this was said very succinctly. It's a quote from a Buddhist teaching. Return to the earth now if your mind is troubled and your heart is uncertain, for it is by returning to the beginning that we can clearly see the path. This is literally and metaphorically about getting grounded and centered. Now, just a word about change and transition. That's a whole other four-part teleseminar series we'll do later in the year. The change is the event, the situation. You change your behavior, move to a new city, have a baby, take a new job. As we focus on change, we address the kind of things we're familiar with in coaching, the rituals of change, the work tools, the SMART goals. The transition is the process. It's the internal story of change that's a shift in orientation and even self-definition of identity, in other words. Transition is attention to the seasonal cycles as well as the daily weather. As you create change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into your new story. This is the P of the roadmap, program new identity to internalize the changes. Highlight that for the client so that you're both collaboratively conceptualizing that step by step to sustain and enhance it. Jung said that the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. This is consistent with our focus in coaching. Remember, by focusing on problems, we further etch those already existing circuits in the brain by looking at possibilities. And now and next, we create new neuronal networks and pathways. So one thing that you may want to think about in coaching is commitment devices. As an accountability partner, we may consider commitment devices. There have been studies on how people self-impose as well as co-create commitments for behavior they know are in their best interest. In one study, college students were given the option to create their own earlier deadlines for 3 papers due by the end of the semester. 75% of them jumped at the chance. And think about it. That option is available to 100% of all the students all the time. People find ways of saving themselves from immediate cravings. The study at Harvard Business School looked at the ways people dealt with purchasing want products and should products. They would devise ways to put off either purchasing or having delivered the want products to be sure that they would do what they should do first. And a simple example in our money stories, automatic retirement deposits to make commitment a one-time decision. So here are the most frequent mistakes made in writing a new wellness story. And I want to kind of summarize this as we wrap up. One, not knowing that you don't know. How can people know that they don't know something? We believe we know, which may blind us to our ignorance. This, in turn, causes us to be blind to signs that we may be mistaken. To know to ask is half the answer. To keep a beginner's mind to look at things in fresh ways without the immediate reactive response of the grooved pattern answer that we have, our way of looking at things. 2, stopping at the first right answer. When we're solving problems or writing a new story, we may stop at the first reasonable action. Now, this could be a correct strategy, but it can also stop us from considering other right answers, other correct strategies that could be even more effective. So ask yourself, and then what? What else? I want to introduce number 3 with a brief quiz. 5 frogs sat on a log. They all considered their options. 4, however, planned their strategy and then decided they would jump off. So how many frogs were left on the log? Well, 5 were left because they only planned and decided. They didn't commit to act. Number 3 is procrastination. I'm talking about some of the broad themes here, the big patterns, putting off an exercise program, not paying yourself first, not saving for emergency, not saving for retirement, taking care of others but not yourself. Most of our lives are lived as if there were an unlimited amount of time left. We have little sense of urgency, contributing at times to a lack of focus. When the two-minute warning sounds in football, a team sometimes achieves more in the final 2 minutes than they did in the previous 28. Well, that doesn't include the Houston Texans, but never mind. Back to my story. This imminent deadline, a finite, limited amount of time to accomplish goals, focuses concentration and increases efforts. In our lives, we only rarely have a two-minute warning. We play as if the notion of finite time is an abstraction, something we acknowledge, but seem not to internalize. Life is finite. It's just that the game clock is invisible. 4. Inefficient energy management. Managing energy is a key to success. This begins with knowing your strengths, limitations, biological cycles, biorhythms, when you perform best, knowing how to enter and exit various states of mind, which works best for a particular task. You know, for example, writing and editing, two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain, to be done at different times. Cluster activities that require the same state of mind for efficiency. Identify what enhances your energy. Anticipation, creativity, pleasure, meditation, prayer. Identify what depletes your energy. Toxic people or situations. Negative mindset. Lack of focus. 5. Ambiguity. If you're unclear about what options are available and don't know what it would be like to pursue them, since you've not done it before, this uncertainty can add to decision paralysis. What looks like resistance may be simply a simple lack of clarity of what the next step is. People are more likely to change when new behavior is crystal clear, not vague or absent or abstract. Eating a healthy diet is both vague and abstract. The possibilities of eat healthier or save for the future are limitless. Where do you begin with something like that? When you want to affect change, script specific behaviors. 6. Too many choices. Some studies showed how an HR department or an individual investment advisor can provide too many choices, and the extra options can backfire, leading to decision paralysis. For example, for 10 offers that were options, the employee's rate of participation went down by 2% with each subsequent. At some point, choice debilitates rather than liberates, and someone retreats to the default mode of not making a choice. Think about it. You've had this experience. There are some choices, but it's just too much mental work and energy right now, so you just, well, I'll decide tomorrow. And think about this when you make your professional recommendation, for example, to your client. I would recommend making a specific recommendation, what that would involve, and what each of you would be doing, and not have, you know, the gold and silver and platinum plan, or, you know, you can have 1 or 3 months, you know, all of that. Make a recommendation and think about the times you have gone to a professional, a doc, a dentist, a CPA, an attorney, a financial professional, and they've made a specific recommendation with confidence. 7, lack of persistence. The truly challenging, courageous part of change is not the initial decision or the initiation of a new order of things. It's the willingness to stay the course. Most people give up when they're about to achieve success. They quit on the 1-yard line. Ross Perot. And finally, number 8, not following success trails. We've talked about that before, of researching and finding and creating your own success trail. Now, just in summary, we've talked about the wellness story from perspectives of cells, mind, brain, and story. Now, a final word about genes. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change the ways genes operate. Our experiences program how active our genes will be. There's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Of our more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only for a certain organ of the body, and some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, including our behavior, are interactive and reliant on one another. What we do as well as what we eat will turn our genes on or turn them off. A belief will turn a gene on or off. Genes cannot operate independently of their environment, internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, our social interactions all interact. One simple example, when you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6 which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which constitutes and contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among other things, stabilizes mood. So, in conclusion, let's talk just for a moment about your true story. The residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. Write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. And as Hemingway said about a sentence, write the truest story possible. A small boy approached Walt Disney to ask, "How can I be like you one day?" And Disney took this very seriously, and he thought about it. He held up a finger to let the little boy know he was thinking about it. And finally, Disney said four words: think, believe, dream, dare. And remember the most important lesson from everything I've said during our time together. Just keep going to the next telephone pole. So it's been a privilege to be with you these four seminars. I've learned too, and I really appreciate your feedback and interaction. I hope you have. Hope this has met your expectation. We're going to do a discussion in just a moment. Thank you for your energy and your presence, and I hope we'll have opportunities to cross paths and collaborate again. In 2 weeks from today, I'm going to start another series on my latest project of applying the mind and brain sciences to peak performance. It's going to be about stress mastery and peak performance. It's not to be missed, but I'm a little biased. And in the meantime, speaking of an earlier reference, I'll be in Steamboat. So we're going to go on discussion mode, so anything you'd like to talk about? Let's do it. If you'd identify yourself and say just very briefly and succinctly a sentence or something you'd like us to talk about or something you want to add, I'm interested in what you have to say. And if you would, manage background noise. I already hear some sort of techno static. So, especially if you're on a computer phone or a cell phone, stay on mute until you're ready to talk. It'd be a good idea, anyhow, because I see that we have a large number of people on the call. But unmute *6 and fire away. I'm eager to hear your questions and thoughts.
Oh, Dr. Kruger, this is Rob.
Rob, I'll keep talking to you if you call me Dave.
Okay, Dave, I'm sorry.
All right, then.
Two questions. The first one, and you may have mentioned this before, so I apologize if I'm forgetting, but how long will the audio recordings remain up after this course?
Well, I didn't say because I don't know. I think the standard is 30 days after the last day of class.
Okay.
So,
all right. Thank you very much.
Time to hear everything and review. And
okay.
Download the outline and the workbook. You can that's yours.
Yeah, I have that. Thank you.
Okay, right. Yeah.
And second question, yes, sir, I did. So I wanted to get your thoughts and input and any research if you have access to it in this area. So suicide rates have skyrocketed in the U.S. Across all ages, races, genders, and some of the most dramatic increases are among children, teenagers, and young adults. It's now the second leading cause of death among young people between the ages of 10 and 17. And this is statistics based from 2007 to 2017. And it's interesting to note this is not the case in other countries like China and some other big industrial countries. The suicide rates are actually dropping over there. This is specific to the U.S. Now, over the same time frame, there's been a heightened awareness in the importance of addressing mental health issues, getting people the right treatment on the right medication. Understandably so, that's very important. But my question is it not reasonable to conclude that some of these mental issues so many people are experiencing are self-inflicted, especially in light of what this course has taught about remapping, mapping and rewiring brain circuitry? And then also, what role do you think, given the correlation between the increased suicide rate in young people, this happened to kind of be the same time frame that social media has exploded, what role, if any, do you think that has played maybe in the increase in suicide and depression and anxiety and all these other things that are just plaguing our society?
You know, those are great questions, and most of them are in an area that I am not an expert in. I'm not an expert in social science or the level of discourse that you're speaking to raise the questions. I can sort of log in on the component about the things being self-inflicted. Everything that we do is writing our own story. And that's what we're talking about, is helping people, groups, whatever way we attempt to do that, to look at understanding and deconstructing their own story and writing a different or a better one or a new one. So that's exactly what we're doing, and that may be one or a few at a time rather than in terms of societies, but I'm sure that we have those who listen to this seminar series and engage with us who have impact at different levels in in universities. I see a couple of people I know from training who are involved in universities, people who are involved in HR or in have exponential impact. But I think that's part of our decision, is where can we optimally have an impact. It may be in developing programs of training. This is how, let's take a couple of examples that to make it really more experience near for us. If we look at a couple of major bodies of work, like appreciative inquiry, like conversational intelligence, each of these are their own significant body of work. For example, appreciative inquiry. The founder of that was a guest of mine on my mastermind group. And one of the people who's done considerable research, Dr. David Copperwriter, found in organizations, in studying a number of diverse organizations, that if you ask a question beginning with a problem or about a problem, you boot up a problem mindset in the respondent, and that begins the conversation for the remainder of the conversation. You have framed it in a problem mindset. Now, if you began with an inquiry about possibility, you boot up a very different mindset that frames possibility as the development of that conversation. Something very, very similar in conversational intelligence. We know now from a compilation of neuroscience that that the first few words that we ask someone, and this is really important as we work with clients, and I'm mentioning both of these because these are going to be useful things whether you're working with an individual client, whether you're doing a facilitation of an executive group or group coaching, whatever you're doing, or helping clients who have exponential benefit. What we know from conversational intelligence is the first few words boots up a particular mindset that processes the remainder of the conversation. If those first few words are ones that the listener or the reader responds to with a question of protection, a question of uncertainty about the intent, that the framework of the conversation then is mediated in that person's mind by the stress hormones of cortisol and adrenaline. They'll be looking for defensive or self-protective or looking at various things, not engaged in a full way in the way that we might see. If, however, the first few words of a conversation are ones that are mediated by oxytocin, the bonding and connection hormone, then that processes in that neurochemical system the remainder of the conversation. And an example of that is someone says, well, I've just been really overwhelmed by all the things that have been going on in my work. If your first question is, well, let's break that down and look at what you can do. Rather, the first response, remember state needs to come before strategy and story, the first response is to resonate with that person's state of mind just in a simple sentence to let them know you get it. You know, I hear how overwhelmed you've been. Now, what that does, remember earlier we did, you know, draw a circle. Inside that circle put a stick figure. That stick figure is your client. Your challenge is to get inside that circle. Outside, they're not going to listen to you very much. Inside, though, that's the potential of establishing and co-creating a foundation to move ahead in a co-creative relationship that is unique to coaching, a collaborative relationship, not a consultancy of problem solving or being an expert. So with that resonance, you enter that circle, and you and the client together then can go someplace new. So those are things that I think about in terms of the examples you gave. And, you know, and here's a out of left field, it seems like, but here's an example of applying the roadmap system to something like negative thought loops, where you know, it looks like you're, you know, really thinking about something, but you're obsessing and you can't get something negative out of your mind and you keep thinking about other negative things. Usually it's at night when you want to go to bed. So the idea here is that's an application that is an altered state. There's some emotional trigger that has prompted that state change to the negative thought loops. And look at those negative thoughts and the negative self-talk. They're in a time capsule. They're not going to change. They can't be therapized or counseled or coached. They're always going to be the same. The remedy is to get grounded and centered and have an ideal response. Remember the neural conditioning chart. And that's illustrated even more than we had time for on the Master States of Mind, that webinar on the homepage of MentorPath. Now, Rob, does that begin at least to get even close to some of the things you're thinking?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate you taking the time to explain it and lay it out like you just did. So that certainly is very helpful, yes. Thank you.
Great, absolutely. Those are great questions, and I know that some are not approached from coaching, but we can you know, we can have a great deal of impact and legacy working one or a few people at a time. Because think about the impact of the internalization of that model and that process that our client and clients then use. So other comments or questions or things you'd like to talk about?
Thank you.
Well, Dave, this is Carolyn. I wanted to just get back with you on that wonderful coaching session that you gave me during the last conversation and then kind of give you an update on what happened.
So
I want to do that because what happened wasn't exactly what I was hoping would happen, but, you know, I think the point you made again tonight as well as last week, state of mind.
Would you summarize in one sentence for anyone who hasn't had a chance to listen?
Oh, yeah. So
there, just a one-sentence summary.
Yeah, I had a client, and I mentioned, as part of my discussion on the phone last week, I mentioned homework, and you suggested, can I use a coaching moment, and then you coached me about state before strategy. And while I thought I was doing that, apparently I wasn't, and shortly after that phone conversation, I got an email from my client saying that at this time, that she felt that this was not, you know, an optimal time for her to be coached, and that she would, you know, she appreciated all the work that I did, but that this was not something she wanted. Now we're speaking honestly, and we're speaking about, you know, I mean, how to coach wellness, and wellness in some cases also means you don't always win. So I wanted to just kind of highlight the importance, and again, you did it tonight, the importance of. Sorry, it's night where I am, but the importance of state before strategy, and so now I'm going to be really mindful of the idea of, you know, people can't be balanced when they're not in the right state of mind, and while I knew that, I wasn't successful in that case.
That's excellent follow-up, and thank you for your openness about that, because that's so important. Because the things that you hear when, let's say, you recommend coaching to a client after you do a sample session or after you do a brief discussion, you make a brief recommendation, and let's assume that you do it clearly, briefly, and simply, and very specific for the client, and the client says, well, you know, like your client said, well, this is not an optimum time, or, well, I need to do this maybe in the second quarter when my cash flow is a bit better, or let me get some things out of the way and let me give you a call back. Now, for every one of those kinds of things that are variations of no, the client fully believes that. They're not trying to deceive you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is to everyone. And this is the beginning of some self-reflection, just like you heard Carolyn do, of what could I do differently or better for this person at this time? Because they're saying no. They believe it. They've had a gut response, and they're moving it to their forebrain to make it logical and conscious and intellectual, and they believe it. They're not lying to you. They're not trying to – they actually believe it. So – this is one of the things. Remember I mentioned, here's an application that I'll circle back and reiterate. Remember when I mentioned the study, the Wharton School of Business study of several thousand professionals who made a recommendation to clients, and they determined what was the most important determinant of whether someone declined or signed on for services. More important than amount of the fee, state of the economy, reputation, credentials, years of experience, was clarity and confidence in the recommendation. And think about when you've gone to a doctor who did not have the clarity and or the confidence in making a clear, specific, confident recommendation. You were out of there, and you should have been. That's the way our clients respond to us. Think about another example when I said clear, brief, and simple. And we know from neuroscience that we can both attend to and retain up to 10 words at a time. Whenever somebody kind of gets a little bit long-winded, notice how you're beginning to think about what you're going to have for dinner that night, or you've been at a presentation and there's not the clarity and the simplicity and the specificity, and there's just, you began kind of doodling and making plans for the next week. So that's something we also learned from conversational intelligence is 10 words or less for a question or a response. After that, attention and retention begins to tail off. A buddy of mine did a series of research, Mark Waldman. One book he wrote is called Words Can Change Your Brain. He did this 10 words or less in contentious situations where both sides agreed, divorce, mediation, arbitration, and each side would agree to do 10 words or less, and he had them put up both fists and put up one digit for each word, and they agreed to stop. When they did this, they came to a resolution in 20 to 30% of the usual time and had a significantly higher degree of satisfaction with their conclusion. So when you ask a question to a client, why not do it in 10 words or less and give them the entire time to then respond? So, Carolyn, does that really – thank you for that follow-up. Was there anything else you wanted?
Yes. Can you give me the name of that author again for 10 words or less?
Mark Waldman, W-A-L-D-M-A-N. And the book is Words Can Change Your Brain.
Yeah, I like that. Okay.
And thank you. Other comments, questions, things that might be helpful to talk about? We still have a few minutes left, 2 or 3 minutes.
Hello, Dave. This is Brad here.
Hey, welcome. What's going on?
I just want to, number one, just say thank you. I feel like I think I missed one of them, but they've been very, very informative. I'm actually in the process of completing, writing a book, and it's not as research heavy as yours, and I think it was very, very valuable to hear a lot of the research that has gone behind what you do, and I just want to say it was really helpful, and hopefully this is something that I can actually, or this is something that I will transfer into a business, because I didn't quite, take the life coaching class. I've just been doing it with clients, working in education, and a lot of the principles that you share are definitely in connection with what I'm writing about, and I'd love to share it with you if you're at all interested, just to get some feedback or anything. So I'm writing about Verge. So the title is Verge, which is vulnerability, experiences, relationships, evaluation. Well, gratitude and relationship and evaluation. So it's five values, and basically it's an example of how I've been able to have success in, relationships and working with other people based on those five principles.
That's great. Where are you learning how to write?
I actually never believed that I would be a writer, and it just came to me after I left the school. After I left education completely, I decided I wanted to give back in some form or way to other people that I wouldn't be able to impact. So I figured just to write it in a book, and that's where it all began.
That's great. I write because I write about what I next want to learn, not because I have something to say. So I think it's a great way of really growing and continuing to educate, and if some people benefit, that's great. So it'll be interesting to see what you do. Thanks for making my comments.
Thank you.
Who else? Later this year, I think I'm going to be doing another seminar series on authoring a first book. There's the seminar recordings and a workbook from that at www.newbookstory.com. If you just can't wait.
Can you repeat that?
Any other questions or comments? Anything else about our series?
Yes. Can you repeat that website?
New Book Story.
New Book Story. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, well, Dave. This is. I'll just make a real quick comment.
I'm sorry. This is who?
This is Marlene.
Marlene. Okay.
I just want to have a comment and a question. The comment is, again, I want to thank you for the time that you put into presenting the content of this seminar, because it's been great and it's been reinforcing what I currently do with a little bit more detail than I ever had. So thank you for putting that all together. So now it's a valuable resource.
Well, it was good for both of us,
then. Yeah, it was, and I really appreciated the comment with Carol. It was a learning experience for me years ago with coaching. It has always got to be the agenda of the client and not the coach, and have them create what they will support instead of us creating it for them. It's like I had learned years ago, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, and it's really about having them create their agenda, because they'll support it more or more seriously, if you will, than if I were to tell them what to do. So
we engage much more fully what we co-create.
It's so true, but you have to go through it before you realize that that's really what it's all about.
Yeah.
So
that's the most basic desire that we have as human beings, is to be effective, to be a cause. And that's part of engaging someone, and why we co-create a story with, based on the clients as a point of reference.
Yeah, it's all about, it's all about them.
What we've been talking about, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely always their agenda, and ask questions for them to do more of the talking than you. And I always say, ask curious and creative questions to get them talking. I know it's happened more times than not where my client feels like they've been hypnotized for a half an hour, because they just get so in the zone about talking and they feel so good about it at the end, because then you obviously bring them out of it. But the question that I have is there any way of connecting up with other participants on this call to further discuss your content? Is that possible?
No, I am bound to not disclose, which is why you saw all the email. The emails that have come from me have been blind copies to everyone else. I don't have permission to give out emails of anyone in our group. So,
and I certainly respect that. I certainly respect that. Is there a way of, like, the participant saying to you, I'm open to having you give my email out, or does that not work either?
Well,
like, if I were to say to you, I'd like to talk to other students in the class, if there's anybody else that wants to offer their email.
Here's the deal, man. Anyone who wants to have a discussion, send me your name and email only. And I'll compile those, and after a few days, send them around to each of you. How does that sound?
That sounds like a good start, for sure.
Okay. We'll have our own little Facebook chat room here without having a Facebook chat room. Yeah, send me your emails, and I'll be happy to compile them and send out the ones who do want that.
I hope a lot of people will participate. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Marlene, thank you for
you
your feedback
very much.
Also.
It's been a privilege to work with you, and if I can be of help to you, let me know. I hope we'll cross paths again. Thank you all very, very much. Bye
thank
now.
You.
Thank you.
Marlene, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Is that Carol?
And the other option is we can stay online and exchange email addresses.
Yeah, I mean, this is such great content. Yeah. It's much deeper than I ever had access to, but it was so neat to feel very reinforced with the depth of his material.
Mm-hmm. It was really excellent. You're right. It was really excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love your example, too, because you know what? I was there, too. I felt like I had to be the one that had all the answers.
No, it wasn't that. But I appreciate your point for sure. But it wasn't that at all. What happened was I didn't realize that I got the referral, but that she was under psychiatric care. And which is, you know, it was a very spirited discussion, and I am very, you know, very much, although when I'm on the phone with my class, you know, I'm talkative, but I'm a bit of an introvert, but I, you know, it's all, they set the agenda. I let them talk, but something happened in this conversation that, like, sent a flag up for me. Because the client was really excited, and yes, I said, you know, is it something that you feel that you'd be comfortable committing to? I mean, you're setting, this is what you say you want to do. How do you feel about that? Is this something that, you know, you'd be willing to actually follow through on? Yes. And something happened between that disconnect on the phone and the next scheduled session where, you know, I only shared a portion of what she said, which what she said was that, that it caused triggers, and for me, that made me know, okay, this is something that's beyond my the scope of my services. So I called the person referring the client to me, and they mentioned that that was what was going on. So here's how I responded back. I said, no worries. I totally understand. And, you know, whatever, you know, but please know I'm here. If you need to reach out or you want to reestablish, you know, a coaching relationship, whenever you are comfortable and ready. So
I couldn't do any better than that. Yeah. I
you
mean,
know what I mean?
You have
like,
to,
whoa.
Yeah, you have to protect yourself, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm not going to do psychotherapy, so no.
And there are people who studied long and hard and degrees for that, mm-hmm. and I know in the beginning it was hard to determine that, but I became sensitive very quickly to someone who is not healthy because we as coaches only deal with healthy individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's stable, somebody who's responsible, somebody who's secure. And I don't know what it was. I can't even teach it. It's just a sensitivity that I had during the conversation, whether it be the first, second, or third coaching session that I would have with a client, that I was able to be sensitive to it.
I taught psychology for 13 years. So it's not, again, as I said, I was taken aback because it really, I didn't set the agenda, nor did I say, you know, okay, this is what I want you to do. But what I meant was I want you to follow up on what your commitment is. This is what you say you want to do, so great. And I thought we were off to, you know, a really great start, and we were. But something happened. And when the language that was being used, really intelligent client, and the language that was being used for me was – flags were all over the field, and I thought, okay, I need to make a phone call. And when I did, that's when I was told, and I thought, okay. So, but that's okay because, you know, the fact that she was even willing to have a conversation means that, you know, she's willing to move forward, but at a much slower speed than I had anticipated, you know, because as coaches, you want all your clients to do well, right? You know, you want them to do well, so you do have to resist the urge, as you pointed out, you know, to co-op, you know, I call it co-op.
Yeah.
Co-opting their story.
I took my certification 10 days out in Utah because I was actually approached to and was asked if I would be interested in pursuing a coaching career. I really didn't know what it was. I was actually asked, and I said to them, I go, why would you be asking me this? Help me out, first of all. And number two, what is coaching? And it's because, you know, and how it came about was because I always ordered the Franklin Covey calendars every year.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they were picking up on that, and Franklin Covey offered a coaching program to be certified.
Oh wow!
And
I'm certified under Dave. So I took a year ago. I took his certification course, and I purposely picked him because he was a neuropsychiatrist, and I really wanted,
connection.
To see from a coaching perspective how you'd go from that discipline to coaching, you know, which is what I love. So how long have you been a coach now?
12 years.
Wow.
And I also went through Coach Training Alliance to get another certification, because the more you know, the more you participate in, the more tools you have in your toolbox, so to speak.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. The first program that I started under was called Legacy Learn, and that was through the Franklin Covey Institute out in Utah, and I don't even know if they still exist, because I think that was 14 years ago. I think it was 2006 I did that, or 2005. And it was like 152 hours of,
oh wow,
after your 10 days out there, because I live in New York, and I flew out there and I, you know, stayed in a place. And we literally studied this for like 8 to 10 days straight. And then once you returned home, you had access to like 152 hours of continued content. You didn't have to take it all, but it was webinars where you watched on your monitor, as well as listening to a speaker, and you had a workbook. And I made a point to take every single one of those classes. Because all of them, you know, they were all so awesome.
They are awesome.
And then they really are. It's like, I just wouldn't take the minimum. And then I also went through the Marshall Goldsmith mastermind class.
Oh.
And from there, I went to work for a financial services company, did really, really well, because, again, my coaching helped me make the conversation so fluent that when my mom and dad took ill, I ended up having to leave. But my personal coaching allowed me to do it all by phone.
But don't you love that? That's one of the things I really love about it.
That's the beauty of it. I started an ICF class in my local area in collecting coaches so that we had someone local as a representative, because it was like the coaches were flying under the radar. And so I was able to just throw out feelers through our chamber, through different organizations that I had been a member of, through real estate brokers, just through different areas, and putting out little feelers if anybody knows of a personal coach. And what I found is I got a lot of people that wanted to become a member of the ICF coaching group that were really not coaches. They were more consultants.
Right.
I said, let me explain to you the difference. And then they go, oh, yeah, you're right. They're paying me to fix something or do something. Where
correct.
Coaching is just
correct.
The opposite.
Correct. Can I ask a question? Where in New York are you?
I'm 60 miles north of New York City.
So what island would that
Midtown.
Be? Midtown?
Middletown.
Middletown. Oh, okay. I know where Middletown is. Yeah. All right. My daughter lives in Brooklyn, so that's why I asked.
Okay.
Oh,
where
okay.
are you?
New York. Yeah, and they go to they have a place in Fire Island, so I'm always back and forth, you know. But a year ago, I decided, you know what's interesting, 12 years ago, I wanted to do, this is something that I looked at as an option, because I wanted to segue, and I wasn't sure, you know, what would be the most effective way. And then I found this, and I put it away, literally. And I'm not mm-hmm. making any of this stuff. In 2012, I looked at it. Last year, or year before, I've been a coach now over a year, so it would be 2 years ago. For New Year's, my New Year's resolution was I was going to do something for me that I enjoyed. And
listen to you.
And that's how I did it. And can I just tell you the one thing? I don't know about you because you've been doing it for so long, but the one thing that I've mentioned this on the phone the other day. You know, when you meet your clients where they are, and then you, through your coaching and your guidance, you allow them to see, you know, shine a light on their own potential and then let them sort of own that. It's kind of bittersweet because, you know, I mean, on the one hand, you feel like a proud parent, like they're not going to need you anymore, which is great, you know? It is. But, you know, and then it's kind of sad because it's like, well, wait, I kind of like, you know, even though they're not your friends, it's like, oh, yeah, but it was really nice getting to know that person. So it's really, I really enjoy it. And as part of our criteria in order to be certified, you had to have X number of coaching hours in. So we literally, I think I had to have 20 sessions, coaching sessions, and then two recorded ones. So that was really nice. I enjoyed it. So I have a dinner engagement in 15 minutes. Here's what I like to do. My email address, let's exchange them, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
Coach, chwest, at gmail.com. That's my email. So give me yours. I'll put you in my book.
All right. So I've got coachchwest@gmail.com.
At gmail.com.
Did I do that wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said coach, coachchwest. Just, you know, it's the initial CH and then West at gmail.com.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. And my the name of my company is Partner Thinking, P-A-R-T-N-E-R-T-H-I-N-K-I-N-G at yahoo.com.
Wait, P-A-R-T-N-E-R Thinking. At,
right.
Uh-huh.
At yahoo.com.
Well, it's funny you should say that because this is the coach CHS. I wanted to do a spinoff. I'm an executive mentor coach, so I coach corporations and individuals. But I'm a holistic wellness sort of person, and you know, like at my core.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to spin off a holistic wellness coaching arm, and that's where the coach. CHS stands for, and it just so happens that my initials are Coaching Holistic Wellness.
Oh my goodness, look at that.
How cool is that? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I went to Logo Works as well, and they branded my logo. They created my whole logo, and I have it all on my stationery and whatnot.
Where did you go?
Logo. It's called Logo Works. I did this years ago. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they have you fill out a questionnaire to try to get to know you, and then they put together some artwork for you. And we ended up creating a logo. I can email you a copy of my logo. And
did they set up your website for you as well? Do you have a website?
Well, I had a website many years ago and when I first started. And I found most of my business got to the point where it was referral-based business.
Okay.
And the website...
I'm glad you're telling me this. Great.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I had a whole bunch of content on there. I had a list of workshops that I would do that were outside of coaching. It was, again, content workshops. And I would get clients from there. And now I don't want a whole lot of clients. I'm busier now without having a website than I did when I had a website because now it's a referral network.
Which is lovely, and you don't have to get online every day and update.
Exactly.
Or listen. Yeah, we're kindred spirits in that regard. So here's what I want to tell you. I am not in town. I'm in California visiting a friend who lost her spouse, and I am going to be back home for a short period of time, and then I'm going to be gone for a month of March. I'm trying something new and different to see what life is like vacationing when it's cold somewhere else. And it's nice, like more sports and health related camp. I call it sports camp or tennis camp. So, but I'm going to be checking my email. So I'm going back home and I'm going to bring my laptop with me because I don't have it. But I'll check my emails and I'd love to stay connected with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope some other participants on the call, are willing to, you know, offer their emails and just, you know, connect outside of class.
We can create our own network. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I really would like to do that, but you know, no disrespect intended to Dave. There are certain things he can and can't do, and I'm hoping that this doesn't harm him in any way. But I'm going to give him my email address and anybody else. Hopefully we can.
I'll send mine to him as well then. But actually, I'm giving it to you, so you have it. But I think that's a great idea, and I certainly would agree to sign on to, you know, be in your network. So that'd be great.
Yeah. That sounds super. All right, you need to get to that dinner engagement.
Yep.
I don't want you to miss it.
Thanks so much, Marlene, and thanks again for your input. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.